You're welcome.
Some of you are already asking now, why don't they use all these fancy technical equipment? And we really know how to do that. But the research does show you that if you use this type of equipment in teaching a class, that people stay engaged. And at 4:30 in the afternoon, it's time for a nap, right? like all of you ever take a nap. So we're Bill and Ray McKee. We're from Pocatello. I was raised in Income, raised with 9 siblings in a 2-bedroom house with no indoor plumbing, up Buckskin, or up Rabbit Creek, if you have any idea where that is. Renee was raised in Preston, and she'll tell you a little bit more about this story, but she was a famous Prestonite and ended up running for Miss Idaho. Oh. And when the Miss Idaho pageant was in the Miss America pageant, we met here at Idaho State University. A little farm boy and Miss Idaho. So we have 10 children. We've adopted several of them. We just can't remember which ones. And we have 32 grandchildren. And Renee and I have cared for 47 foster children over the years. We've done a lot of foster care with children. So we've done a lot with kids. We teach a lot of parenting classes, family classes, couples. We're going to teach a couples class tomorrow and a class for the youth on depression and anxiety. But a little bit about just our history. I'm a licensed professional counselor on the Center Counseling here out in Chubbuck. We have 39 professional counselors out there that work together, and we have social workers and psychiatrists. We also, if any of you are familiar with Pocatello, I actually started the McKee's Pet Center when I was about 21, many, many years ago. And left that and went into counseling. So we love animals. About 12 years ago, to see, what's that? About 12 years ago, we were out in Nashville, Tennessee, serving as missionaries. Renee, who was a picture of health, 55 years old, running down the road, did a lot of running, had a stroke. And just came home. We didn't know what it was. It was a ischemic stroke. And took her rushed into the hospital. And while she was there, she had a heart attack in the hospital, undiagnosed. And so they lost the bottom half of her heart. They diagnosed her the next day, and they did heart surgery on her. And the doctor came in and said, "I think she's going to be okay." And I said, "Wonderful." You know, we took 5 of our children out there with us, and five of our youngest daughters. In fact, Kylie, you raise your hand, Kylie. She's our tech person today. She was the oldest of the five. And anyway, in about when she came out of heart surgery, the doctor, she went into cardiac arrest and died. She was dead for about 20 minutes, and there were 20 people working on her. I was in the room. They were just working on her, trying to bring her back and try to do whatever they could, and just shocked everybody. And they said, she's modeling, we've lost her, she's gone. And and all of a sudden she started moving and started breathing again, and they were her back. And so the doctor said, "Let's just let her rest of the night, and we'll see what happens." In the morning, they had her on life support by then. And the next morning he came in, he said, "Is she not moving?" And I said, "No, she's not talking to me." And he said, "That's not good." And he grabbed her, rushed her into another room to the MRI on her, and she had a hemorrhagic stroke during the night. All the blood was bleeding into her brain. And so he rushed her into the emergency room, and they did heart surgery, brain surgery. They did brain surgery, and he said, "She'll die during this brain surgery. You need to prepare your families. There's just no way." And he said, "You don't want her to live because she'll be a vegetable." And she lived through the brain surgery.
I choose broccoli.
Buy you a broccoli.
and she went into a self-induced coma, which he said, "We don't want her in a coma." But he said, "She'll still pass in this coma." So she was in a coma for almost 30 days. I'm a faith-based person, and I said, "Heavenly Father, what do you want me to do?" Because, you know, all of you who have spouses, think, okay, well, my spouse want me to live like this. Renee's a musician. She's an incredible musician. And I kept thinking, I don't know what to do, but every time I pray about it, the Lord would say, "Just wait and see, Bill, just wait and see." After about 30 days, she started moving her fingers, she started moving her toes, she started blinking her eyes, and over the next 3 months, she was in the ICU in the hospital and just slowly came out of these strokes, and had to relearn how to walk, had to relearn how to talk, had to relearn everything. The reason I'm telling you this long story is I want you to know that our brain does have the ability to create new neural pathways, and this is a field that I've been in my whole life, but it does have the ability to create those new neural pathways. So when you run into people that say, oh, I can't learn that, or I can't remember that. Just, you know, we all need to stop and reframe, because our brain has this capacity. When she started kind of coming out of this coma, she didn't know our children's names. She didn't know how the 2 + 2 = 4, and she had to relearn all of this. We put her fingers on the piano, on a little keyboard, and she said, you made me practice the piano while I was in a coma? And I said, yes, we did. And those of you who are musicians, we turned music on. Incredible things happen with music. And you know that as homeschoolers, just incredible miracles happen. And slowly she started working her fingers and started doing things and practicing things and connecting with the brain, and you'll see today how marvelous it is. The reason I'm telling you this is her major side effect is she lost her cerebellum in the brain surgery. She has no cerebellum, and so she has no balance. And they said she'd never walk, she'd never talk. And
I showed them.
I hang on to her a lot. And I have to say one more funny thing. She's going to shoot me for taking so long. But when she was coming out of her coma, they were trying to figure out if her brain was really working or not. And the nurse came in and she goes, Miss McKee, what is this? And she pulled out a pen. Renee was speaking at a hole. She had a trach. She was speaking at a hole in her neck after they pulled the trach out. And she says, that's a pen. She said, what do you do with the pen? She says, you write with it. And she said, well, what do you do if you had a broom in your house? And she said, you'd give it to your husband and tell him to sweep the floor. And I share that with you because she has no memory. She has no memory of being in the hospital. She was in the hospital. She was in the ICU 3 months, has no memory of being there. And we all were there singing to her every day and doing all these things. But my point is I hope with whatever you do, that you keep your sense of humor going, because your sense of humor will keep you alive and it will motivate you. And I love that that she did that as she was trying to figure out coming out of a coma. She has no memory of that, but we still laugh about that when she said that through a hole in her neck. So anyway, she's my hero. I want to tell you that because it brings tears to my eyes because I've watched her fight through this and I watched her learn how to walk and learn how to talk and to do so many things all over again, and she's done that. And so I wanted to introduce her that way and tell her how much I love her.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I was going to start this, and so I'm going to say something, and I want you to repeat it after me. Ready? Energy is everything.
Energy is everything.
Energy is everything.
Energy is everything.
Energy is what?
Everything.
Hey, you got it. That's great. Good. I just wanted to start by telling a story of an elderly man who was driving down the road.
It's probably your husband.
Anyway, he got a call on his phone, and it was his wife, and she said, Herman, be careful. There's just been a report on the news that there's a car driving backwards on the interstate. And he said, one? There's hundreds of them! I don't know if you ever feel like that, but... you know...
Well, do you not have chairs back there? There's a couple of chairs over here. Come up and find a seat. We'll slide over for you. It's warm in here, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
very warm.
We need to open a window. Or it is very cold outside.
Oh, is that right? So, anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, come on. Do you want these chairs? Or there's two up here and there's one up here.
I've been sitting on a chair too long. You can have my seat.
It's more comfortable.
They're not coming, though. So don't. Okay, you choose, but there are chairs up here.
Okay, I would just like you to think.
You can tell about the cross island javelin floor. You can't miss that.
What?
The cross-eyed javelin floor thrower.
We've already taken too much time. Bill wants me to tell you that he hopes that what is said about us is similar to what was said about the cross-eyed javelin thrower. He didn't really set any records, but he did keep the crowd awake. Okay. So we're here to talk about self-esteem and with the children that you're teaching. What are some of the characteristics as you look at the people, the children in your lives? Can you tell us some of the characteristics? And Bill's going to put them on the board. Just name what.
For characteristics that you would like to see your children have as they leave your home laboratory.
Determined.
Determined.
Curiosity. Or curious.
Is that not working? Kind.
Hold on.
Confident.
Confident. Did you get all of those?
There was another one someone said.
Hardworking. I'm curious.
Self-reliant.
Resilient, someone said.
A little stubborn.
A little stubborn.
That goes in with determined.
I like that.
Value creators.
Great.
Self-disciplined.
Honest. Joyful,
yes.
I think about my kids, they're just so happy.
That is so great. I have 28 piano students, and a lot of them are homeschooled. And I just have to tell you, even though some of their parents are in here, they are the finest children that I've met. They're the most balanced children that I've met. They're so respectful and kind. And so whatever you're doing, it's wonderful. I just want you to know that. Now, we were raising our kids probably, how old are you, Kylie? Oh, about 40 years ago we started having kids. And we really looked into the idea of having homeschool then, probably for the same reasons that you did. And it just, I don't know. We ended up not doing it. Our kids went to public schools, and it all worked out. But as I look at some of the results of the homeschool, I just think it's great. I look at some of these. Now, can you think of one thing that would help them? Is that up there? Did you write it up there?
No.
Oh, can you think of one thing that might help them to increase, to be able to do that? There's just one thing.
I'm assuming you want confidence. But.
You're right down the line, yep. So, and that goes right with self-esteem, right? Yeah, so how do we get self-esteem? First of all, I want to read something to you. Every human being is trained to say something to others, trained to cry out, I'm alive, notice me, speak to me, listen to me, confirm to me that I am important, that I matter. I love that. Because every one of our children, whether we're dealing with one or two or five, every single one, and you probably feel the same way sometimes. Ah! Somebody noticed me. It's really important. You know, I remember thinking when I was raising my kids that if I could get my kids into soccer and football and dancing and playing the piano and all of these extra curriculum things, that it would make them have high self-esteem, right? Is that true? Well, I thought that.
Or they could be in the Miss America pageant, or they could be the football star, football hero.
But yeah, and I think so many of us.
Or straight A's. Sorry.
So many of us have that, and I did too, I think, as a child growing up. Even, you know, to enter the Miss Franklin County pageant and the Miss Idaho pageant and going to the Miss America pageant. I mean, that was really great. Did that help my self-esteem? No. I can really say that it probably helped a little bit along the way, but it did not create self-esteem for me. And that's what we're going to talk to you about today. Is about how to help create really high self-esteem in kids. First of all, I need a marker.
Oh, you want one for that board?
Yes. Oh, it's right here.
Over there.
Okay. Is this one?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, we have to remember that this is a person. I'm not an artist. Okay, this is a person. Okay? This let's say that this is their performance.
or their behavior. This is what they do. And it's so important that we separate the person from the performance or the behavior. In other words, so that you can say, you know what, Johnny, I don't think your room looks that great, and I still love you. Can you see the difference? You can talk about the behavior, but you can't really say that the behavior is the person. And that's how, I think as we go on and follow, and maybe you're reading some of our handouts as we have some of those follow right along with this. You have something you want to say about that, Ben?
Well, yeah, as Renee's explained all those apps, and the behavior, the performance, whether it's something they've accomplished. And by the way, we learn and grow, and we have wonderful experiences with all of those experiences. I mean, we grow in wonderful ways to have experiences, like being in the Miss America pageant. That was an incredible experience. Did it help our self-esteem? No. Being the captain of the football team, an incredible experience. Well, these are great things, but did it really help people's self-esteem? Typically, it doesn't. So when you separate the person from the behavior, we go back and say, I am the chooser of this behavior. And I have behavior that works, or behavior that does not work. So as we deal with children, if we can talk about, I'm going to separate their behavior, and most of you as parents do that really well. There are times when we go, kids drive me crazy or whatever, but when we go back and say, I'm the chooser of that behavior. Because a child that believes that they are their behavior, when that doesn't turn out so well, say, if Renee's in a coma for a month, And she's having a horrible experience. If she is her behavior, is that who she is? No.
See, all my life, I was the piano player. I was the accompanist. I accompanied our high school choir, our junior high choir, our sixth grade choir. I even played when I was in the third grade. And so who was I? I'm the piano player. Oh, I'm not. I am me.
That's
I am the chooser.
That's what you choose to do.
And for those of you that are religiously inclined, you are a child of God. That's who you are. Your behavior is separated. You know, Christ actually did that. Do you remember when he separated the person from the performance? Do you remember when the lady committed adultery? And what did he say? He said, you know, those of you without sin, cast the first stone. But then he said, go thy way and sin no more. So in other words, he was able to separate that lady from her performance. It what she did was not right. It was not okay. But she was still okay. Does that make sense?
So if we believe that we're raised in people to believe that that's who they are, like I'm the therapist, I'm the counselor, if that's who I am, you know, what will happen when I fail in that someday? If I'm the greatest basketball star, what will happen when I fail in that someday? Is that who I am, the failure? And so part of it is separating that on both sides, both the positive and the negative experiences.
But I think it's important, as parents, as we can separate that performance with our children. Separate them and let them know, wow, man, you know, I love you. There's nothing you could do that would make me not love you. Because I love you. Now, what are you going to choose to do? Well, I want to choose to go be in the Navy. Okay. If that's what floats your boat, yes, let's do it. But whatever, you know, whatever they choose to do, let them work on that, but still help remind them that they come back to who they are. Okay. Let's see. I forgot where I was.
Keep your word break here. I think it's about self-esteem.
Okay. Well, and part of it, I think, comes with responsibility. You know, a lot of times we teach responsibility. Oh, where's the marker?
For that one?
Oh, for this one.
These are hard to keep track of. You want me to write that up for you?
No. I'll write this. You can do that. You know, we teach responsibility to our kids. What does the word responsibility mean?
The ability to respond.
Yes. Response. And think about that for a minute. As parents, do we react or do we respond? And is there a difference? What's the difference? Come on, I had a lot of heads. What was that?
I said choice.
Choice.
It's like conscious effort to choose instead of just reacting.
Okay. Something that's almost planned ahead of time, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Emotion.
Emotion?
Maybe when I react, it's more emotional because I'm upset.
Yes.
Rather than just...
It's kind of a knee-jerk thing.
Yes.
You know, and isn't it interesting? And maybe you don't do that. Maybe you've got this all handled. But it seems like when I was parenting, the default was always to go back to how I was parented. Is that right?
Yeah.
Because what else do you know? So, you know, you go back to that. But then you can start over, and that's what we're going to talk about. Did you hand those out?
Right now, yeah.
Okay.
So what is it? What is it that we can do as parents to build self-esteem and build that self-love? And I'm going to pass these out to you. If you'll take one of those. Renee and I have worked on this for a lot of years, and what we've discovered is if we can teach children to keep their word or their integrity, or adults, all of us together, the more that we keep our word, the more integrity we have in our lives, and we automatically feel better about ourselves as we go back and work on those intrinsic rewards, as so many homeschoolers that we work with anyway, that you just work so hard on them, so those intrinsic determination of accomplishments. And so did you want to drop that out or just show them the poster?
Yeah, we can just show them the poster. You've got a copy of this handout. And you know, when we learned this, it really changed my life. Actually, the one that I just erased was a major thing for me, because how many of you have ever felt like you were your performance? You know, you're the cook, or you're the this, or you're the that. But no, if you can stop and think, no, I am me, and that's what I choose to do. And sometimes I choose not to do it, but sometimes I choose to do it. That's not who I am. Now, how many of you have ever given your word to someone that you would do something and you didn't do it? Anybody? How did you feel? Okay. This is kind of what we're talking about here. If you can make a commitment with yourself, with your children, and it works really good with yourself. But there's a ladder. As you keep your word, what happens when you make a commitment to do something and you keep it? Like you say, I'm going to exercise 3 times this week. 3, 5, 1. But you do it. How do you feel? Yeah. It kind of, cause a self-respect? It does. And as you keep doing that, it produces self-love. Now, if you break your word, if you say, yeah, I'll do it. No, you didn't do it. How do you feel? Yeah. Do you want to do the diet first?
What's that?
Breathing to the diet.
Yeah, just turn, pick out somebody by you. Just turn to them real quick. And I want you to think of a time in your life when you broke your word with yourself or someone else. You don't have to tell them what the situation was. But just tell them how you felt, okay?
Turn you two.
I had a situation once where I was a keynote speaker for a group over at a hotel here in town.
Wait till we're done.
Oh, I've spoken at a lot of different places, and I forgot that it was that day. I missed being the keynote speaker. I wanted to throw up. I was just sick inside. And I thought, you know, how many times have I spoken and felt so good about keeping my word? And then one time in 20 years, I messed up. And I still feel sick when I think about that because I broke my word to those people. They were educators, actually. They come all over the state of Idaho. And so, but I can still just feel that pain. Now, look at your partner, whoever you picked out by you. How does it feel at a time when I kept my word? I did what I said I would do. What did that feel like?
Can you see? Okay, you could stop.
Give us permission to talk.
Yeah, I know. So can you see how important that concept is to children? To be able to help them to keep their word. And that's what it will end up being. Self-respect, self-love. They will have the ability to love others. And you'll have universal love. Now, is that always going to happen? No. We're gonna mess up. We're gonna come down here and we're gonna blow it. And so then we have to start over. And we start over and we start over and we start over. But as they know that they can start over, everything that they do, it creates a consequence.
And I know many of you know this, but think about, so self-esteem grows and is built by our own integrity with ourselves and others. As we increase in integrity with ourselves and with others, our self-esteem grows up. Now in my field in therapy, there are so many young people and adults that are depressed, discouraged, serious anxiety, lots and lots of struggles. And often there are people, when I really start talking to them about, how have you done on keeping your word with yourself and others? And very often we're down on these lower steps. And so when you're teaching your family, when you're working with yourself, and nobody's perfect, you got to be careful because this can be used as a tool to hurt children as well if you're just always on the case about this. But how are you doing? Did you keep your word with yourself? How are you feeling about that? We have to get, as you know, we have to get the guilt and shame out of it. If you put guilt and shame with this, it can work against their self-esteem. So you've got to use this in a way where it goes back to their own integrity. Think about kids right now with saying, hey mom, you promised you'd get me some ice cream. Oh. And we might have said that in passing. Maybe sometime we'll get some ice cream. You promised. Isn't that what they say? Well, you promised. And they hold you to your integrity. It's important to them. So as we go
and
back.
And that gets us every time, doesn't it?
So as we go back and start calling them on their integrity, so this works for parents and kids. So the key here is we need to practice. It's incredibly important. Now, one of the reasons we're bringing this up is I want you to think about something. Parents are working with kids often on cleaning their room or doing their studies or reading or whatever they're, you know, doing the chores or feeding the animals or whatever they're doing. What would it be like, and some of you already do this, to say to your child, Mary, did you keep your word today? What are you thinking?
Dumb idea.
Tell me more.
My kids. I did that a long time ago, and I realized the only real discipline, the best discipline, is to actually talk to them like they're an adult. Why was that? You know, if you treat them like an adult, they'll be an adult. You treat them like a kid, they're going to be a kid.
Right, right.
So you, that love and respect, and that as they. Pretty soon you don't have to do any disciplining. I don't.
Right, because.
Kids, they do it themselves.
Because.
It's true.
Because they already know.
They're disciplining themselves.
Because they have their own feeling. They're like, well, that's going to make me feel bad, so I'm going to do this.
Right. So you're already doing this.
Well, because of sad experience.
Right.
Right.
But you're already doing this. So this isn't about shame and guilt. It's about how did you do? How did you do today? Because a lot of parents are saying, well, did you get this done? Did you get your piano practice? Did you get your reading done? Did you get to this done? This done, this done, this done. And that's just going to put shame and guilt.
Well, because when they fail, because they didn't.
Right.
If they didn't get it done, then you just took him right down that ladder to the very bottom, and now I'm the one down there to hate others. I'm the one they're going to hate. And that's the last thing I want my child to do.
And they may hate
absolutely.
You. Absolutely. But who do they really hate?
Well, it'll be themselves.
Yeah, yeah. They're really angry at themselves. And they'll say things like, I hate you.
Yeah.
You're so hard on me. You're so... Johnny's parents don't make him do this. We don't have to do... You know how hard you guys are? I think maybe it's just because you do this... Maybe it's just because you're homeschoolers. Maybe, I don't know if a kid would ever say that. But. And so that becomes a challenge. So, let me drop one of my other concepts or ideas for building self-esteem. Is I want you to imagine that life is somewhat like a Christmas tree, and we're such great artists. And outside of this Christmas tree would be a no choice. Just shout out some of the no choices that you have in your families. And they'll be different for every family, by the way. Like, we lived on a real busy street as a young couple. And we had the no choices to play in the front yard because semis were going up and down. But what are some no choices that some families might say?
Brushing your teeth.
Okay, brush your teeth. Maybe a no choice to not brush your teeth. What else?
Going to bed.
Maybe going to bed, yeah. Some families, they'd say no, you choose. Some other families say no. You're going to bed when it's time to go to bed, you know. No. So those could be some no choices. How about hitting your brother?
Yeah.
Or lying. I said to one of our kids, and my keys don't lie. That's a no choice. So there could be, you pick out what those no choices are in your family. Okay? We have a no choice that says no put downs. Like you're talking about. We don't want anybody putting anybody else down. Okay? So we have this tree, it's like this. We have 0 to 3 years old. We have 3 to 6 years old. 6 to 9 years old. 9 to 12, 12 to 15, okay? And you're right, the ultimate goal is we want to discipline themselves. That's the ultimate goal. Within this tree, we have tons and tons of choices. And we'll call them, all these C's in here, they're like little Christmas tree ornaments. Tons of choices in there, okay? This is one of our theories of raising children is we want children to make as many choices as they can within those trees as long as they don't maim or kill themselves. And as you've learned as great parents, because I know you're great parents, the more experiences they have where they fail, the better they're going to be. In fact, the excitement for Renee and I is when we see a child failing in something, because we've taught them that they're not their behavior. So when you fail, then you're not a failure. But we're like, this is good, because this failure will be a greater experience than the successes sometimes. And so within this tree, I have all these choices. Now, we have, with foster children, there's a variety of foster children. We have some foster children that are 17 years old that have some 3-year-old choices. Why? Because they haven't kept their word very good on some things, and we haven't been able to trust them. We're not mad at them, we're not angry at them, we're not upset at them, we're just saying, your choices decide how big your tree will be. We have a 12-year-old child that may have 17-year-old choices. And I see that very often in your homeschool families. Some of your children are just so adult and mature, it's amazing. And they have so many more choices just because of that. But the child gets to decide of what their choices will be. A 3-year-old, three and under, 0 to 3-year-old child, what are some of their choices?
Which shirt they wear.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But not on Sundays.
So that may be a no choice in your home. Somebody else will say, wear whatever you want. Dye your hair green. You know, other families say, no, that's a no choice. You know, so yeah, that, you get to define what that is in your opinion.
Like, does a tiny baby have choices?
Water or milk?
What's that?
Water or milk?
Water or
milk? I'll tell you, they don't want it. Don't
okay, they do, and they can choose.
Yeah.
And so that's the very top of the tree, and as it goes out, and as they prove themselves, man, give them all the choices. And I think that's exactly what we found. By doing that, by the time they get down here, teenagers were fun.
Because we want high self-esteem kids that are making choices to govern themselves. Or we haven't really been successful. When we were serving out in Nashville, I had a parent call me one day and said, could you get my daughter a pillow? I said, what? Your daughter's 19 years old, you don't think she can get her own pillow? No, could you get that for her? Go out and take care of her. And sometimes we have what we call these helicopter parents and lawnmower parents that just move everything out of the way to make sure that no one ever feels any pain or suffering or hurt, as you all well are aware of. But within this tree, we want them to have all those experiences of struggling and hurting and having, and the love for us is just unconditional. And it goes back to, so you didn't fail because you didn't feed your dog today, and did you keep your word? Well, I feel bad about that. Well, that's good that you feel bad about that. It isn't a bad thing that you feel bad about that. It's a good thing. It will actually build their self-esteem, if that makes sense. And I'm so glad that you feel sad. Now, some kids, we run into this, especially with foster kids, they don't feel bad about they didn't feed their dog. Let the dog die. You know. And so what do you do about it? The only way you're going to reach those some of those kids, and these are extreme cases, but the only way we're going to reach some of those kids is to work back on, okay, what's important to you? Everybody wants something in life. Everybody wants and needs something in life. And so what is important to you? And we talk about those situations with what do you have value, as you were talking about, what do you have value for? Are there questions about this? It makes sense to you.
One of the things that we used to do and that I think is really important nowadays too is to be able to make agreements with them rather than the rules. I don't know. How is it for you? What's the difference between an agreement and a rule?
I think agreements both-sided, like two sides take part in it. A rule just be like, I say this and you do this, right?
Perfect. Perfect. And it was really interesting for us to be able to say, you know, did you keep your word today? That means, did you do all of the things that you were supposed to do? And we made that agreement with the kids in a family council. And Bill's going to talk about family councils. I don't know, do most of you hold family councils? You have
maybe
those?
You might have run that board about family councils. Can I take that more from here? That work on that one?
Yeah, okay.
So with family councils, we just think they're, and by the way, these things we're teaching today are theory. They've worked well with our 10 kids, and, you know, it's really fun to see them with adulting in really healthy ways, and they're not perfect, but anyway, so this is just one theory. So we want you to use the parts that work for you and don't use the parts that don't work for you. But what we've done is with family councils, we have three parts of a family council, and many of you do family councils, but we have three parts of a family council. The first part is responsibilities and chores. In other words, what does it take to build a family? And we set up agreements in the family on, okay, do we want a dog? Do we want carpet? Do we want books? Do we want a television? Do we want food? Do we want a sink? Do we want indoor plumbing? And our kids will, of course, want indoor plumbing. Well, I would raise with that indoor plumbing. It is possible. You know, we all live and we do survive. But anyway, so you talk about responsibilities. And then are you willing, and this is the agreement part, are you willing as a family to be a part of these responsibilities? And then we all talk about that. And many of you probably do this and say, okay, what are you willing to do? Or are you willing?
Like I'd say, I'm willing to cook, and I'm willing to buy the food, or you're willing to buy the food or pay for the food. And some of the kids would say, okay, well, I can clean the bathrooms. What needs to be done? And as you do that, and let them know, so many kids don't even have a clue what we do as parents. And I think through family councils to help them to know, you know, what's going on and who's doing what. And Dad isn't just a figure that's gone all the time. He's contributing to the family.
and hopefully, like we've heard here, fathers are part of the family education.
Right. So. Family time. So the responsibilities would be that part of that family council. What are our responsibilities, and what are you willing to do, and have all the children and ourselves. And by the way, a three-year-old can conduct this family council, not just the parents. Everyone needs to take part, like you were talking about, treating people like adults. Give everyone a chance to do this family council. But this part is, okay, who has what responsibilities this week? We did a fun thing called a kitchen night, where everybody had a kitchen night. And what that meant is you're responsible to make sure that we have food and clean up that night. Now, the little ones weren't really gifted at that, and so mom or dad would help with them on their nights. But everyone had a kitchen night. And it was amazing how few dishes some of the older teenage kids use when they have a kitchen night and when they plan that out. And then kids are busy. They have a lot of things going on, so they could trade their kitchen nights. But so it just wasn't just left with one person always doing a kitchen night. There are a lot of creative things you can do. We discovered that it was better to, like, somebody had the pink bathroom all week instead of changing it every day. It was like, oh, I can't keep up with all that. But anyway, we'd talk about those assignments once a week. But it's really empowering to see a 4-year-old look at a 17-year-old in your family and say, okay, John, what will you be doing this week? You know, and getting a commitment of an agreement for what they'll be doing that week. So the first 15 minutes, we talk about responsibilities. Second 15 minutes, we talk about schedule. Who has what when? Who needs a car? Who needs a ride? Who needs whatever you need this week? What things are you expecting your parents to attend? A game, a party, a dance, whatever. What things are we doing? So we put that as the second part. The third part, we would put what is working and what is not working in our family. So it gives everybody a voice in the family to say, this is what I like about our family, this is what I don't like about our family. And that's really challenging sometimes. That can go on forever, so we always would limit that to 15 minutes as well, because we want our family councils to be concise and quick, and so that everybody wouldn't see them as a drudgery. And so that's when we would set up our agreements, which would go back to keeping your word, did you do what you said you'll do. So then when they had these assignments, let's say Kylie had an assignment of cleaning the pink bathroom and practicing the piano and making her bed or feeding the dog or whatever her responsibilities were that week, then we could say things like, did you keep your word? Did you do what you said you'll do? In the past, before that, I was always going things like, do you know how hungry that dog is? And you know how that dog is feeling right now? And I'd instill all the shame and the guilt. And I just go, when I went back to that, you're not in trouble. It's not bad. Will you recommit and keep your word with me? Because you're going to want me to keep my word with you too. That's really imperative sometimes. And sometimes when we get foster kids would argue that with me, I'd say, okay, and now you want to go to a soccer practice Thursday night at 7:00. What would it be like if I said, I'm not taking that. I don't ever say I'm not taking it. I don't give them like a threat. I just say, what would that be like? Or, what would it be like if you went over to Mr. Jones and you worked for him for 2 hours and he said he'd pay you $10 an hour. And then he said, no, I changed my mind. I'm not doing it. And I'm not keeping my word with you. What would that be like for you? Life revolves around agreements. When you don't pay the power bill, the power gets shut off. And so keep your agreements and life works. So we would talk about that as a family. Can you keep your agreements in the family? Do you have a thought?
Oh, man, I had two of them. Oh. I remember one of them. Well, I remember we had, our oldest was a girl, and then we had four boys. And I remember at one of these family councils, we got down to what is working, what isn't working. And she said, well, I have something that's not working. I said, okay, Michelle. There's always pee on the toilet seat. So that was a great way for us to be able to handle it. The boys are going, wasn't me. I didn't do it. But they knew that there was a problem, see? And it becomes a family problem. It becomes a family growth situation.
But if you're not your behavior, you know, you don't get in trouble. You just get to be responsible.
Oh, I remember the other thing I was going to say. Sorry, I have this problem that I don't remember a lot. So, and now I forgot it again.
But she does magnificent. Don't you think, before she's been through?
Yeah. Oh,
I'm in awe. And she'll say, oh, I can't remember these things. I said, you are amazing what you've done with your brain.
Okay, it came back to me. One thing that really works, especially if your children are not behaving or not doing what you want them to do, to just be able to say, you know what? I take kids to soccer practice that get their work done. I take kids to this, that do whatever. And then it's really not a problem. You know, it can be this, but if you can find a way to handle it so that you're not fighting with them, I think that really works.
Those concepts come from some of your 11 logic of, you know, I take kids to do this, I take kids to do this, they will do this. And so, and in teaching kids to be respectful, responsible, and fun to be around. And that's our goal in our home, is how do we teach kids to be respectful, responsible, and fun to be around. And instead of getting on them for all these different things that we're bothered about, we can say, are you being respectful? Are you being responsible and fun to be around? That's what McKees do. That's what we do in our house. How are you doing at that right now? Okay, you know, and we talk about integrity.
We used to have a list of agreements, and we'd sit down at a family council and we'd say, okay, what do we believe in? What do we believe our family should do? And they would listen. They'd say, well, we should be on time. Well, we should do this. Well, we should be honest. Yeah, well, we should be this. Okay. And so I remember I wrote it down, and we wrote it this great big long family creed. It was beautiful, really. Anyway, so then it finally came down to the fact that it came down to three agreements. That we're respectful, we're responsible, and we're fun to be around. And you stop and think about, is there any kind of behavior out there that doesn't fit into one of those three categories? And if you have a family agreement, that comes down, that comes back to being respectful, responsible, and fun to be around. And then you can just say, and the other thing, sorry, is it's so important, if you don't keep your word with them, you own it. Mm-hmm. If you were supposed to take them somewhere and you didn't get back, it's important for you to say, you know what? I broke my word with you. How can I make it work for you? Man, do you know what that does for them? That just makes them stand 3 feet taller to know that my mom or my dad made a mistake. And we don't have time to go into this, but we had consequences. And there are three different kinds of consequences. One is just a logical consequence. You're going to have to help me here. So get thinking.
Arbitrary.
The next one is an arbitrary consequence. That's one that you kind of set up by yourself. You say, well, but you set it up with the child and say, okay, so if you do this again, like coming home late. Let's say that they said that they would be home at 10. And, you know, it's 10:15, 10:30. And you get to say, hey, did we have an agreement that you'd be home at 10? Yeah. Look at what time it is. Well, okay, so can we recommit to that agreement? Yeah. Next time, 10:30, they're not home. Okay, so I think that what we may do is have a consequence. Let's set up a consequence for you. If you're not home, maybe you get to fill up the car with gas. You can, I don't know, what's a consequence?
But you want the child to be a part of that consequence. So, and that's a whole other class. So to have the child be a part of those, setting up those consequences for themselves. So it's never a punishment. It's never a put down or with shame. Or it's always just a very positive way of saying, okay, let's start over. And I promise you, as parents, you will break your word, and you'll get to start over too, many, many times. And it's a fun thing to teach that's okay.
But it's hard.
Yes.
So did you set up consequences for yourself then?
Always.
You broke your
Always.
Word. And you said, okay, if I do that again. What did that look like? What's an example of like a...
Oh, I have a great story for that one. I even remember it. Kaya, this was before you were born. Just shut your ears. No. I used to be a real yeller. I mean, I used to yell at my kids. Well, I say that now and I think, man, I can't even believe that I was. But I did, didn't I? I yelled at him. And probably just to get him to school. Hurry up! Just hurry up! Can you go get this on? Da, 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 da. And finally I said, okay, you guys, I'm going to make an agreement with you. I am not going to yell at you anymore. And the kids are going... And I thought, okay, I've got to do this. So I said, help me. And I asked them, help me set up a consequence that will help me to quit yelling at you. And they said, we want you to drive us to school instead of them taking the bus. Oh, crap.
I only had to drive them to school about 6 times before I quit yelling. But you know what? I don't yell anymore. And sometimes I look back and think, did I really do that? Because I've told that story a lot. But now, as I look at my grandkids, of course, they're different than our kids, you know? They're just so sweet.
But it really empowers the child. It really does empower the child to be a part of those consequences and to watch mom or dad carry out those consequences for themselves. Sometimes I'll say to our children or our grandchildren, hey, grandpa or dad needs to take some time out. I need to go sit on this chair for a while. And I'll take some time out and just rest for a while. This is my resting time. And then I'll come back and see how I can, if I can do better. So it empowers the kids to do that. One real quick last thing, because we're going to run out of time before we regret a day's worth of training in an hour. What we say about ourselves is much more important than what other people say. What we say about ourselves, what we say to ourselves. And we have 10 minutes, but I'm going to see if I can pull this off. What are the four most common negative things that we say about ourselves as people, as human beings, that our kids say about themselves, that our adults say about themselves? Just shout them out real fast.
Stupid.
I'm stupid.
I'm not
lazy.
Good enough.
I'm lazy. I'm not good enough. Stupid, lazy, I'm not good enough.
I can't.
I can't.
Can't.
I can't. Can't. I'm so fat.
What was the second one? You're so lazy.
I'm lazy. Sorry. I can't. I can't do it. It's too hard. But those are common things that human beings say about ourselves. We don't always say them out loud. Sometimes kids will say them out loud, but we'll say them sometimes very quietly. Okay? Sally, just tell me a minute, will you? You saw me last night, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be the Walmart store greeter.
Oh, no.
Well, what was the other one?
Okay.
Oh,
the other ones. Okay. I missed them.
I can't.
And I'm lazy. We got that one.
Enough.
I'm not good enough.
Not good enough.
Can you help me do this? Oh, do it fast.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's pick out the three of you and just come up and help me real quick. Okay. These are your three kids. Okay. So I want you to imagine that Chanelie is the Walmart store greeter. And these three people are coming to shop at Walmart. And so when you introduce them and say, welcome to Walmart, you say one of those things off the board.
Okay. Do you want me to say welcome to Walmart first?
Yeah. This is not in her nature at all. The reason I picked on her is because I know her so well. It's not in her nature. Okay.
Welcome to Walmart. You're stupid.
Welcome to Walmart.
Welcome to Walmart. You're lazy.
Welcome to Walmart.
Welcome to Walmart. You're fat.
So what's going to happen to Chanelie, or what's going to happen to these people if this keeps going? Are they going to feel bad?
She's going to lose her job.
Someone's going to hit her. She's going to lose her job. Crash. You know. Okay, not very good. And we can all laugh about it and say, well, that's really stupid. Okay. Now, imagine that Chanelie is their mom or their dad. And she's saying to them, welcome to Walmart. Go ahead.
Did you want me to...
You're just coming... Oh, well, I know. Welcome home from school. Welcome home from school.
Hey, you're home. You messed up again? You didn't pass that test? Hey, you're home. You didn't clean your room.
She is so stupid, too.
Hey, you didn't do your chores.
And he can't do anything. He doesn't do his chores, he doesn't do anything. Okay. Now, I'm hoping you're all thick-skinned. Your point is here. Would this be okay?
No.
What would happen to these kids if they were raised in that environment?
They don't want to come home.
They'd believe it, and they wouldn't want to come home. And they would
be
pretty depressed. And they would... And it would, I mean, especially if they got on a regular basis, and thank you so much for helping out for you. But so here's my question to you. If it's not okay to do that at Walmart, and it's not okay to do it with your kids, how come it's okay to do it with ourselves? And today, I want you to, as you go out of this room, think about this. Whenever I put myself down, whenever I cut myself down, because no one hears it, only you hear it, well, how come that's okay? And if we do that 100 nanoseconds an hour or a day or 1,000 times or 1,000,000 times a day, subconsciously, is it any wonder how we can turn a world and ourselves into discouragement, depression, frustration, anger, or whatever? Are you okay? Do you all need therapy? But thank you for helping us
you're
show that.
You're not that way.
and you know you're not that way. But the point is subconsciously, we all say, we catch ourselves saying, I just got through with cancer treatment down in San Diego, and I gained 50 pounds. The doctor said, you're going to gain 50 pounds. So I look in the mirror and I go, oh my gosh, you've gained 50 pounds. And I hate it with this medicine and everything. But you know what? It is a part of my experience. Well, I can guarantee you, every time I look in the mirror and say, I've gained weight, I'm going to go get another chocolate chip cookie. It is not going to inspire me. You know. So my point is, as you look at this, train yourself as well as and model for yourself. Because one of the maxims on that sheet we sent out to you is, kids get in more trouble for modeling our behavior than disobeying us. We get in lots more trouble for watching what we say and what we do. And we can't be perfect. So when you're not perfect, model that I wasn't perfect. Model that I mess up. And I get to recreate my agreement with you. I get to recreate my commitment, my integrity, keeping my word with you. I get to recreate that. Isn't that wonderful? We get to let it go and start over. And if you can teach them, that we don't have to hang on to these things for ourselves personally. What's your other thought, anything?
I was going to go back to the little, you are not your performance.
Yeah.
You are not your clothes. You are not your body. You are not what somebody says about you. You are you. And we can't compare. We do a horrible job. We do a very wonderful job of competing and comparing with other people. And especially you people who are doing the homeschooling. I just want you to know that I have the most admiration for you. I mean, I don't know how you do it. Frankly, I don't know how you do it. And at the same time, it's so important that you remember this, all of these things for you too. That you have to have that high self-esteem in order for your children to be able to have that high self-esteem. Does that make sense?
So we're in awe with your home education. It's amazing what you're doing. And we applaud you so much. And the big end would be on your worst parenting days. And you know what I'm talking about. Be kind. Be kind to yourself. And realize that you're probably in the upper 10% of the nation. And in my field, you're in the upper 2% of the, just be kind to yourself. And speak kindly. Not only as we model and do this with ourselves, it'll automatically overflow into our children. It'll automatically just happen. It is the most incredible thing. We just say that with appreciation and admiration for all of you. And if you come tomorrow morning, we'll work on couples. Because we've been working on 47 years of couples, and we're still working hard at it. It's hard. And we're going to be talking about husbands and wives or partners, whoever you're with, working on couples communication. Yes?
So, for a teenage child that, I have a child that's actually, she's in high school, so she's getting a lot of that outside comparison.
Sure.
What would be the biggest advice to help
deal
with that child?
Okay, the question was, is for a teenage child that's gone back into public schools and they're getting a lot of that comparison and competition and competing, what's the best advice? Practice validating first. Say, yeah, that's going on out there. It is the world we live in. And how will you handle it, Mary? How are you doing with it? What do you think about it? How does it fit for you? Those, I would ask questions back and so that she can give her feedback and you can see where she's at. And she might be in the middle of it and go, well, yeah, but I've got to go compete and compare. Well, that's a choice you have. And go back to the choices. So everything's always about choices. But remember, your choices have to be within these boundaries. I am so concerned about this new parenting thing that we give parents so many choices, we've given kids so many choices that they're not emotionally able to do. You take a 3-year-old and say, choose your cereal out of these 200 cereals. They don't have that ability. I'm just using that as a silly example. So be careful about the choices. The choices need to be within their bounds of making those choices. And that's why I said I had a 17-year-old that had some 3-year-old choices or a 3-year-old that had some 12-year-old choices. You know that as a parent. You're the parent. Does that make sense? So go back and see where she's at. Ask her questions.
Okay. Well, thanks for all you do as parents.
Awesome. I didn't know I was you. Sometimes. I was artist.
Any other? Is this the end of your day?
Yeah.
Well, we have a mingle.
You have a mingle. Oh, have fun. So any quick questions, we're happy to stay and answer them because I know some of you.
So here's what's going on next. And it's in this room.
Oh.
So it's called the co-op mingle, but it's anybody can mingle with anybody.